Welcome to the Money Insights Podcast, where high income earners go to learn wealth building strategies that will take them from high income to high net worth.
Welcome into the Money Insights Podcast, where we talk all things money and business. I'm your host, Christian Allen. With me, as always, on the other line, Rodney the Pod Zabriskie. It's sticking, even if it's just with me.
What's going on, Rod? Hey, glad to be here. And I know I talk about this regularly, but it's right now it's summer and it's hot. So last time we recorded, I talked about how grateful I was for AC. I'm still very, very grateful for AC because it got even hotter. Maybe I should stop talking about it. If I do this next time, it might just go like we might be Phoenix instead of Utah. So
we have Chris Odegaard, one of our clients. He's been with us for about 5 years. He's got a really cool story to tell. So we're excited to have him on and talk a little bit about his journey, both through his career and his real estate investing. So anyway, I'm super excited about it.
Yeah, and he has, I think people can be really excited about this. The thing that I've learned and that I really appreciate about Chris is that he catches a vision of something and then he goes after it. And you'll find out he didn't do everything correctly, right? The way he would have chosen to the first time. As is the case with any of us, right? And so that's, I think that's the whole point, is something we can learn from him is once you see it, once you catch that vision, is to pick a starting point and go for it, and cool things can happen.
Absolutely. I think we can take a lot away from this interview with Chris. So enjoy. Make sure you listen to the entire thing. It's really good stuff. Chris Odegaard, welcome into the Money Insights Podcast. How are you today?
I'm awesome. Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, we are super excited. So even though the audience knows a little bit about you already, why don't you just tell us a little bit about yourself so that we can get to know you better?
Sure. So I'm currently the prolific investor, but I wasn't always this guy. You know, I grew up in a middle-class family in the suburbs of Cincinnati, Ohio, and I learned exactly what my parents knew and what they taught me, which was to, you know, go to college, get a job with benefits and a pension, put money in a 401k, and have this really slow climb out to retirement someday out in the distant future. And that's what I did for quite a number of decades. And it was working. You know, it was working okay. It was, you know, I call it a path to mediocrity, you know? So I was on that path to mediocrity. Well, and
of all the paths to mediocrity, I think you were on a good one, right?
Yeah, well, so. Yeah. Well, it kind of took a little nosedive and to use an aviation term, and then took a serious climb out. So that worked okay, you know, put two kids through college. And then in 2009, in my mid 40s, I had what I fondly refer to as an illiquidity event, which in my case was a divorce where I lost 55% of everything I'd ever owned and thousands of dollars a month in cash flow for a number of years. And so a friend of mine, coincidentally around that time, had actually before that time, he said, Chris, you got to read this book. I bought the book and I put it on my nightstand, and I'm more of an Audible on the podcast guy than a reader guy. So it sat on the nightstand for a long time, and I was getting ready to go somewhere on a business trip. And I thought, I'm going to read this book. And anyway, of course, the book was Robert Kiyosaki's Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
Yeah.
And I read that and it just kind of lit a fuse and launched me off into the world of alternative investments, which a lot of has been real estate. And you know, then a short 9 years later, I was ready to, I don't like to use the retirement term anymore. I call it when I was ready to fire the man. And I did. And I started a blog at theprolificinvestor.net. And that was earlier than I would have retired, even if I hadn't had that illiquidity event. And in 9 short years, I had made up all that 55% and multiplied it many times over. And so I started this blog and I thought, man, it's too bad that, you know, that I don't have a good of a record from 9 years earlier. You know, now I've got a semi-back office set up. I've got a bookkeeper. I get financials. I have a balance sheet. I know where everything is. And I didn't have that back then because I wanted to make a comparison. You know, what were the dollars then? What were they now? And then I realized, you know, we did have an accounting because in order to fairly split up the assets, fairly, 55-45, that's a new legal fairness thing.
Fair,
You know, the attorneys, they had to count everything up. So there was a record. So I went back and got into my divorce papers. I went, wow, I made up all that and multiplied it many times over. And that would not have been possible in stocks, bonds, and mutual funds invested through a 401k. So that was kind of my, I was asking myself, well, what, you know, who am I to start this blog? What kind of credibility do I have? Why should people listen to me? And I went, okay, maybe I have a little bit of credibility.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love it. Can we jump back for just a second? I want to talk a little bit before we get into your kind of current situation. Talk about just what you did for work. And, you know, I'm really curious about, I know you were a high-level executive at Boeing for a lot of years, but just talk about kind of what you did for work, and then we can move into this next stage.
Yeah, I went to Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University in Daytona Beach, Florida. I wasn't a particularly good student, and I went down there for their two-year program to get my airframe and power plants license, which is what what you need to have if you're going to work on airplanes. And there were lots of places I could have gone to. Most of them were just technical schools where you got that. And my dad gave me some very wise advice. He said, well, you know, if you go down to Embry-Riddle, and by some freak of nature, you decided to go on another 2 years, you could actually come out with a bachelor's degree, you know? So I ended up getting my A&P license and going on for a couple more years and got a bachelor's degree in aviation technology. And then that was right about the time when the space shuttle was first launching. And so I saw a lot of launches of the first space shuttles going out of Kennedy Space Center.
Yeah.
When I graduated, I got a job working for McDonnell Douglas at the Kennedy Space Center for a while.
Nice.
But, you know, I was an airplane guy. I wasn't a rocket guy. And so I was like, man, I just spent 4 years getting all this education. Now I'm in this rocket world that I don't know anything about. So a friend of mine had gotten hired at the Boeing company out in Seattle. So they flew me for an interview out there, and I passed. And I started as a maintenance training instructor on the 737-300, teaching airlines about how the avionics systems worked on that airplane. And so that was the beginning of a 33 and a half year career, which culminated in me being a director of the contracts organization, where in airplane sales, you have three people on the sales team. You have the marketing guy, the sales guy, and the contracts guy. And I was the contracts guy. I wrote the contracts. I did all the hard-nosed negotiating, and nothing was done until I signed it. And when the airplane was finished, you know, however many, sometimes years later after that initial, I was there signing the bill of sale and collecting the money, verifying that the millions of dollars that were due, you know, were in our bank account. And so that was I call that my MBA on steroids, you know, in the big business
for
world.
Sure.
I mean, you know, 33 countries, you know, selling airplanes to airlines all over the world, one king. And, you know, it was just, you want to, in a career that's 33 years long, and sometimes it tends to get worse at the end, which mine did. And I don't know if that's just because I get older and, you know, more belligerent, or if things have really changed.
It's a little harder. Yeah.
It's probably a little of both. But when I look at it on whole, it was a great, great ride. And so that was my job.
And just a quick observation.
Go ahead, Rod.
So the fact that, you talked about how you kind of made up for everything that you had lost and all this kind of stuff, right? And you made it better, like you could retire earlier. Well, most people who are listening to this and just in today's business world, if they have a job similar to what you had, the pension doesn't come with it, right? So the fact that Boeing, you know, being who they are and that whole pension thing, and even after that, for you to say, oh, but I was just able to create something much better, that just takes it to another level to me, in my mind, right? Because the 401k, those kinds of things are what they are. But in addition to that pension, I mean, that's says a lot.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I mean, I had a good paying job, some better in other years than in some. And Boeing did have a pension, a 401k. But like I said, in 2009, 55% of that all went away to somebody else.
Yeah.
So.
Awesome.
So Chris, I'm curious, what attracted you to making, okay, actually, just for the audience, we've worked with Chris for about the last 5 years, and we've seen him go from working at Boeing as an executive there to becoming a full-time investor and a teacher, right? A teacher of investing principles. And so you've made a really cool transition, but just what is it that attracted you to the alternative investment space in general?
Well, you know, I grew up in the world of conventional investments, stocks, bonds, and mutual funds. And when I read that book, and then it just so happened, not too long after that, Robert Kiyosaki's training organization was in town putting on a free seminar. And I went to that first class, which was the freebie that led to the upsell to the next class and the next class.
Yep.
And they were all worth it. And I took a bunch of them, but it was just mind blowing. You know, just real estate. Oh, there's this thing called wholesaling where you can actually put a property under contract and just flip the paper. And in Seattle at the time, that was a $10,000 to $15,000, you know, wholesaling fee. And there's something called lease options and, you know, rehabbing and flipping and creative financing. And I was like, I had never heard of any of this stuff before in my life. And I bought a training package, and my son was 17 years old at the time. I said, hey, I got two tickets to these for, you know, over the next 2 years, do you want to go? And he did. Hmm. And he was, of course, the same way, because I didn't teach him any of that stuff because I didn't know it, you know, until we started taking these classes together. And we were riding home one day after one of these classes, you know, both just excited about what we had learned. And I said to him, his name's Jake. I said, Jake, hey, you know, you can tell anybody you want about what we learned here, but I just want to warn you that there will be a lot of people, some of them in your family, that are not going to support this. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, I called there's a chapter in my book on this, you know, adult family members who said, well, that can't be true. That must be illegal or unethical, you know, and these are people who are still working for the man, not millionaires, telling a 17-year-old kid that he shouldn't be investing in real estate. Yeah. Now I thought, you know, he could have just as easily said, you know, listen to the people he knew, love, and trusted, right? And just said, okay, well, they said this must be wrong, I better stop. Luckily, he didn't. He's a very successful commercial real estate broker today. But that's what people are. It's just like swimming against the tide or flying against the headwind. There's just this mass media and opinion that everybody has just been fed their whole lives, and they just think that stocks, bonds, and mutual funds and IRAs and 401ks are where it's at. And that's not true.
Yeah. It's the loudest voice.
So Chris, you've had this transition happening over the past 5 years, but just talk a little bit about what it's meant for like your bottom line in comparison. Maybe just give us an idea. Like, okay, we know that you were a very good saver. You made a good living with Boeing for all those years, and had already had a significant net worth when we met. But what's been that kind of acceleration like since maybe leaving Boeing and becoming a full-time investor?
Nothing short of incredible. I don't know if I'm trying to think of what kind of number that I could share, whatever it is.
That might be hard, right? That might be hard, but maybe just, I think, like, from a time standpoint.
You mean, so explain that a little bit more, what you mean from a time standpoint.
And I think you kind of referenced it before, but you know, you had done a really great, like I said, you'd done a really great job saving even before we met. And, you know, let's just say theoretically you had a couple $1 million versus, like, in the last 5 years, it seems like you've probably been able to double or triple your net worth just by focusing on real estate investing primarily. Yeah. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I can tell you that from the one number that I have is from, if going from memory, is from 2009 when I had my illiquidity event to 2018 when I fired the man. My net worth during those 9 years increased 5.6 times, and that was that kind of right about then is the time that I met you guys and started optimizing, mm-hmm. you know, my income through one of your products. So I honestly don't know what that number has done since 2018 to 2021. But you know,
you've been after
there is,
it. You've been after it prolifically. Is that fair to say?
Yes, prolifically. Yeah. But it is kind of a hockey stick, and I can only you know, I can only see this you know, going more. And you know, I working with you guys and continuing my education, you know, I just keep pulling every lever that I can, and you know, I'll just keep doing that because it's a lot of fun.
Chris, I want to talk a little bit about like how you use the investment optimizer in a second, but before we do that, tell us about like your first real estate deal, kind of. What was that like? And maybe, you know, some of the things you learned from it.
Yeah. My first real estate deal was when my daughter was coming to the end of her freshman year in college. She had been living in the dorm. And she said, "Dad, I don't want to live in the dorm next year. I want to live off campus." Mm-hmm. And that's when I said, "Well, I'll be damned if I'm going to pay somebody else's mortgage up there, you know, for the next 3 years. So she and I bought a duplex together, you know, within walking distance of the campus up in Bellingham, Washington, at Western Washington University. And that was the time when President Obama had his first time home buyer tax credit. So when I say we bought the house, she was on the, you know, she was on the deed, but that got us the whatever it was, $10,000 or $15,000 first time home buyer tax credit. And then she leased out we leased out one whole side of the duplex, and she leased out one of the two rooms on her side. And she was doing the kind of the on-site property management and tenant mm-hmm. screening. And I was 100 miles away, you know, doing the other piece. So she got a, you know, an education doing that. And one of the, let me back up, before we bought that place, I remember a real young cocky guy who was teaching one of the real estate classes through Kiyosaki's organization. And he said, look, don't waste your time driving around and looking at properties that you don't have under contract. He said, get it under contract, then go look at it. So I put this duplex in Bellingham philosophy. Under contract, and I didn't look at it or do anything until he said, look, you've got all kinds of ways to not purchase this property if it's not the right one. Put it under contract. You've got an inspection clause. You could have a neighborhood review. Whatever. So sight unseen, put it under contract, went up there, it happened to be the right one. And we bought that. And
oh, that's great.
And then I started, you know, getting smarter with the entity structure. So I had I started a company that would be the property manager. And so check this out. So part of my daughter's portion of the rent was paid to my company from her 529 plan.
Nice.
Totally,
I like
totally
it.
Legal.
Nice.
Totally that's, legal. Totally ethical.
Great idea.
Yeah, she had to have creative. Somewhere to live.
Yeah. 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 So that's you had to pay rent someplace. Might as well pay it to her dad's company. And she was an officer of the company at the time too. I think that might not be completely okay, but anyway.
So you end up buying this property sight unseen. And how did it turn out? I mean, it sounds like it was a place for your daughter to live for a while, but like, how did it work out overall?
It worked out fine. And we had that, you know, she had gone on, traveled around Asia for a couple of years, went and got her her master's out at UNLV. And then she was running into some problems with credit because she had this mortgage obligation on her credit report, but she didn't have the income. So at some point in time,
support it.
Some point in time, you know, I sold it and I had another rental property as well. And the real estate guy said something interesting at one point. They said, once a year, you should take a look at all the assets that you have and ask yourself this question, knowing what I know about these assets, would I rebuy them again today? Mm-hmm. And when I looked at that duplex and the single family rental, and I had some performing and non-performing notes, and I was looking at the financials and the time that was involved, and the answer was no. You know, I would not. Mm-hmm. They weren't bad, but it wasn't optimal. And I said, you know, I can do better with my money. And so it took me a couple of years, but I liquidated everything and started doing some other things.
That's profound advice, right? Like, and I think people miss that a lot. So a couple of things I picked out. One is that you just felt like, okay, you have to go for it, right? Some one of the hardest things, especially in real estate, is just doing it, you know, getting in there, jumping in. And so there's a lot to learn from just being able to say, hey, I'm going to do it. I'm going to have to learn as I go. And it sounds like you did a good job of that. So anyway, I think that's been, you just got a great story, Chris. I want to talk a little bit more about what you're up to today. So you've done various different types of investments over the years. What do you like? What do you like doing most today? Like, what kind of investments are calling your name?
Yeah, I am, you know, there was a guy that I studied under, and he had something called the power of zero, because he was all about getting property.
You know him.
And, and there's another guy that talks about the power of boring. And so what I do is in some ways kind of boring, but I'm really into, you know, being a limited partner in syndications. And that includes multifamily, which is my biggest holding, ATMs, and a little bit of self-storage. And it just, I say that I wrote an article on my site that says, you don't invest in assets. I don't invest in assets. I invest in teams. I invest in the best people that know how to go out, acquire apartment buildings in the right market, drive up the value, and then sell them or refinance them at the right time. So I'm betting on, you know, I'm betting on the people. You know, you could have two identical apartment buildings, one on either side of the road, and one would be wildly successful and the other one wouldn't. And the only difference between the two buildings is the people running it. So that's what I invest in, is the people that are really smart at a particular thing, you know, apartment buildings, ATMs, self-storage. How about insurance policies?
Maybe we'll talk a little bit about that for a second. So obviously we teach people, you know, various financial concepts to help them enhance the investing that they're doing. And that's the whole idea of the investment optimizer, right? Optimize it, make it more powerful. But maybe just, I'm just curious, and we've talked about this, but what is it that maybe attracted you to the concept? And we don't need you to dive into all of the details, but just kind of what are some of the high level things that attracted? And then I want to talk a little bit about, and this is, I think, what most people are going to be the most interested in. How have you used it over the last few years since you've had it for investment purposes?
So I guess the thing that caught my, the hook, the thing that got my attention was making the money on the same money in two places at the same time.
It's a good concept, right? And it sounds too good to be true, right? So it's one of those kind of interesting and confusing things that you probably had to dive in on.
Yeah. And along those lines, you know, one of the things I've learned is not to run away from things that sound too good to be true. A lot of people will go, oh my gosh, it sounds too good to be true. It's got to be a Ponzi scheme or illegal or unethical. And so I would have left so much money on the table if I backed away from something that I hadn't heard of because it sounded too good to be true. So hopefully that's a lesson everybody should take to heart. But yeah,
that's good advice.
And the irony on that is that you mentioned a minute ago, kind of the book about boring. And I mean, what's more boring than life insurance, right? And yet,
some of us are really weird. We find it really exciting, right?
it's how you use it, right? It's putting it in the right.
No wonder I can't get a date. I think life insurance is exciting, right?
That's true. That's the challenge.
Yes.
So Chris, you. Like I said, we started working together about 5 years ago, and I know you've been active using your policies, putting money into it, funneling through. What are just some of the things? I mean, you talked about some of the investments. Are those the same types of things that you've done through using the policy to invest through?
Yeah. It's to me, it's just a giant, giant revolving wheel. It's a line of credit. So, you know, my money comes to me, and wherever it comes from, other investments or an annuity or a pension or, you know, wherever, and it goes into, you know, fully fund that policy every year. And I think I've done that every year on the two policies. And then it sits there, you know, earning this tax-free 5% creditor protected until it's time for the next investment. Then I call you guys and say, hey, I need a loan of X amount of dollars because there's an apartment building in Dallas. There's one in Vegas. There's one in Atlanta. And then it goes out. And then what just happened that you guys are very familiar with, I had, as opposed to the illiquidity event that happened back in 2009, I had the liquidity event. I sold liquidity event, which is when money comes in, and sold some properties in Washington. So you get this big check from the title company. And where does that go? First of all, it goes back in to fully fund those policies if I haven't fully funded them yet. And then so I did that, but oh, wait, there's still money left over. Well, let's pay down or pay off all the existing loans. So now I've got all that. So now the loans are all down to zero, and I'm bringing that interest cost down, and the money is all sitting there ready to be used again, you know, when the next deal comes along. So it's a central and integral part of everything that I do.
Yeah. Thanks. So thanks for hitting on that. Go ahead, Rod.
You mentioned something, Chris, that I think would be enlightening for people to understand. So you said you have two policies.
Yes.
What would possess you? What was the process that we went through just to help people see why you ended up with two?
Yeah. So, you know, some of these are, so these are some big numbers for some people. Everything's relative. And for others, people, they're not that big.
Sure.
But, you know, we started looking at $100,000 policies for me. And I'm going, gosh, am I going to be able to? And you really maximize this when you can fully fund that.
Can I clarify? Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but I think this is important. When Chris is saying $100,000 policy, he's talking about a policy which he contributes $100,000 a year, which then he goes creates this opportunity fund to invest. So I just wanted to clarify that. But thanks for being willing to throw out some numbers.
A way bigger death benefit, but
so
I can put in up to $100,000 a year, and you get the biggest bang for your buck out of the policy if you can fully fund that policy every year for 5 years. And so, you know, I'm thinking this policy is great, and I'm going, man, 100, am I going to be able to do that? Because I don't really feel like I want a $100,000 policy if I'm only going to be able to hit, you know, 25. So anyway, so we did that policy, and then, you know, I don't know, within the first 6 months, I went, this isn't going to be enough. We're going to need another policy, you know? So we got another $100,000 policy. And, I mean, just trying to get those numbers through there. And,
And that's pretty common that for people to end up with multiple policies over time. It's pretty common.
And it's been cool to see you actually do it.
Using it.
Well, you've got a good story, Rod. What's the guy that you guys work with? How many policies does he have?
Oh yeah, we do have a client. He's been doing this for a lot longer from before we met him. But I think we counted like 67 policies that he has.
Holy when you smokes. Count, and we did not write 67 policies.
Yeah, exactly.
But I think we ended up consolidating a little bit. But he was a real believer, and he would just funnel a lot of money. He owned pawn shops. He owns pawn shops and does really well. So in California,
policies really cool. On himself, on his family, on employees. He just loved the concept so much that any opportunity he had, like, you know, employee benefit type of stuff. Let's set up a policy for you, and it'll be really beneficial for you in the long run. And so, a big believer.
Yep. So he did it and made it mutually beneficial for everyone. That's a great point. Okay, Chris, I want to talk a little bit more about kind of the prolific investor, what it is, what people can expect. But first, kind of what inspired you to start the prolific investor, and what is it?
Yeah, well, I just found the transformation that happened in my life of reading Robert Kiyosaki's book, and you know, coming out of this giant financial hole, which, you know, some people would have never gotten out of it, or maybe never thought they could get out of that. And the fact that I not only broke even, but just kind of shot out of it like a rocket ship I'm just kind of a natural teacher. I really like, if I had a superpower, I think it's making things that are complicated and making them simple. Rod knows I try to create all these single page charts that explain things. And so I just felt very passionate about sharing that information. And also because, people, you know, I'm 59. So people of my generation and my father's generation, you know, we grew up in a more stable time, appreciating asset values, companies had pensions. Mm-hmm. And I just think that my kids, who are both in their 30s, that generation, the people younger than me, they're going to have to be smarter than I was, mm-hmm. to, you know, to you know, have a nice retirement or fire the man early or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so that's who I'm really after. And what's interesting is that that those people are a lot more open-minded than people of my age are. I mean, I've got, there are some guys that were kind of in close proximity to me as neighbors or coworkers as I was going through this. And, you know, there's some of them that watched me do this and didn't change a single thing that I was doing. But mm-hmm. I was on the phone today with one of my daughter's friends. She's 30 and she's not liking her job and she's trying to figure out a better mm-hmm. way. And so we talked about a handful of things, and she'll probably be giving you guys a call because, you know, I'm in the whole life based policy, but for her, you know, I said, look, this other indexed universal life policy that's got the 15 year kind of time frame and the bank's loaning you a good portion of that, that might be not the only thing that you do, but stop doing your 401k and put your money into that. Right.
So yeah. It's what we call the retirement accelerator. So
there
yeah,
you go. Absolutely. The accelerator. Okay.
Well, and I think what you're doing is just a really cool, noble cause, right? There's a lot of people who fit in your situation that in a couple of ways, right? Maybe they want to make a transition from a job, even if it's a really good, like a really good high paying job. They want to have control of their time, freedom, sure. all of those things that come with it. And I love that it didn't matter that you were, let's see, when you really like made that move, you were probably what, 54, 55?
56.
Is that about right? 56. Okay, I was close. But I love that it didn't matter and you just went for it. And so that's, I think it's inspiring. So,
well, let me add one more thing to your previous question. So as people, as I was, you know, we're starting to write these articles and do videos and stuff. And I got the question, well, Chris, what are you trying to do? And what came to mind was Maslow's hierarchy of needs, where you have on the first level, the physiological needs, food and water and shelter, then you move up safety and security. And eventually you get to the top, which is self-esteem. And I envisioned the pyramid, but not on the pyramid, in the shadow of the pyramid where it's dark and damp, is where all the conventional investors are, right? Stocks, bonds, mutual funds, right? 401ks, IRAs, those are the conventional investors. They're down here in the shadow. And then as you get on the pyramid is where all the alternatives are. And I took 13 categories and I compared alternatives to conventional investments across these 13 different categories. And alternatives, whoops, I lost my thing here, hang on. Alternatives are better in 11 of the 13, one is neutral, and conventional investments only have one advantage, and that's liquidity. And so I created this chart to kind of explain, again, you know, a complicated thing on one sheet of paper to explain, you know, kind of what it is I'm trying to do and why, you know, alternatives are better. So
here's a quick question before we wrap things up here. Two questions. One, what kind of advice would you give to people in a similar situation to where you were, where they want to make that move? Or let's just say it's people who want to get into the alternative space, but they haven't quite, maybe they're in the study phase, but they haven't been able to make that jump. They have got analysis paralysis or whatever. What advice could you give?
Well, I'll go back to this young gal, who my daughter's friend, who's 30, and she and I have, this is the second conversation we've had over a couple months, and she's, you know, she's not accredited. So we've talked about turnkey single family residence, and she's, you know, struggling with what to do. And I said, you know, there's no real easy answer to this. You have got to just gather as much information as you can from as many sources. And then it's kind of, at some point in time, it's like a jury trial, the preponderance of evidence says I should go here. And so we were specifically talking about single family turnkey rentals. And I said, look, I'm going to send you some stuff. And let's say it's a list of 10. You can do all the homework. You can research them, look on the web, then start making some phone calls, talk to them. And then pretty soon you're going to go, you know what? Seven of these I was unimpressed with. Now you're down to three. I said, now you need to get on an airplane. You need to fly there. You need to shake these people's hands, meet them, go look at the properties that they're buying and turning around and selling to investors like you. And you will eventually accumulate enough knowledge and confidence that, you know, you're ready to do this. In addition to, you know, studying and learning about real estate and how you analyze a property and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, the teams.
I've heard him say on Bigger Pockets that it's a team sport. Investing is a team sport. So I really loved that you used that. I thought you were going to say I invest in people, which is true, right? But you said it specifically. You said I invest in teams. I thought that was cool. Okay, so if people want to get in touch with you, Chris, if they want to connect with you obviously they can go to the Prolific Investor website, prolificinvestor.net, right?
Yeah, they're prolificinvestor.net.
But aside from that, how can people connect with you if they'd like to?
Well, if you go to the prolificinvestor.net, there's a handful of things that you can do. So if you go to the homepage, there's a conventional wisdom quiz that you can take. It's 10 questions, and they're kind of trick questions, you know.
They are trick questions.
Rod, you've taken it?
I did.
Okay, Chris, I'm going to take that test.
And I knew they were trick questions, and I tried to anticipate all of them, and I'm embarrassed to say I didn't get them all right. So.
Yeah, so you can take it.
You made it hard. That's good. Yeah. You got to be a challenge.
You can take the quiz, and you'll get an email with what my answers are versus what your answers were.
That's fun.
Then, you know, if somebody wants to have there's a little place on there, a coffee cup. If somebody wants to schedule a free 30-minute virtual coffee with me to talk about anything investing, we can do that. I also have, and it's been kind of a, this has been kind of a, just kind of a road that I've traveled down. I'll have these conversations. People say, well, Chris, what if I just want to have these conversations every week or every month? And I'm like, okay. Yeah. So there is an alternative investment a paid program that I offer. And there's a place on there where you can click to do that. But the most exciting thing, since you asked, is that this fall, my first book is coming out called Get Off Your Ass, Manage Your Money, Why You Need Alternative Investments. And there's a little link on there where you could pre-order your first, your copy, which just means you'll be the second person to know when the book comes out right after me. And I'll tell you where you can go to buy it. So,
okay, Chris, I think I talked over you a tiny bit. Tell us the name of your book again.
It's called Get Off Your Ass and Manage Your Money, Why You Need Alternative Investments.
I like it.
Beautiful.
And also I'm on every social media. So all the links to the social media are there on the website. So anyway.
Okay. Well, thank you, Chris. Make sure everybody that you check out Chris's website. He's got all sorts of good stuff. He's got a great story and a lot to offer. So Chris, thanks so much for being on the Money Insights podcast today. Gosh, we appreciate your time.
Oh, I'm happy to do it. Thanks for having me on. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to the Money Insights podcast. To learn more about the financial and business strategies discussed in this show, visit moneyinsights.net.